stockings, but the joy was short-lived.
My father worked for DuPont before and after the war in the nylon division, and he told me a story about how when nylon first came out and they were trying it out for use in stockings, the men in his division were asked to take these stockings home for their wives and girlfriends to try out. My father brought them home to my mother, and she was delighted with the first products because they were so sturdy.
The DuPont chemists had every reason to be proud of their achievement, as even men touted the strength of nylon stockings.
The problem was they lasted too long. The women were very happy with the fact that they didn't get runners in them. Unfortunately, this meant that the companies producing the stockings were not going to sell very many.
DuPont gave new instructions to Nichols Fox's father and his colleagues.
For the men in his division, it was back to the drawing board to try to make the fibers weaker and come out with something that was more fragile and would run so that the stockings wouldn't last as long.
The same chemists who'd applied their skills to make durable nylons went with the spirit of the times and made them more fragile. The everlasting thread disappeared from the factory floor, just like in the cinema.
We need control of this discovery. Complete control. If you want twice the amount in that contract, we will pay it.
A quarter of a million.
To suppress it. Yes.
How did the chemists at DuPont feel about deliberately reducing the life of a product?
Excuse me.
It must have been frustrating for the engineers to have to use their skills to make an inferior product after they'd tried so hard to make a good product. But in a way, I suppose, that's the outsider's view. Probably they just had a job to do. Make it strong, make it weak. That was their job.
Engineers were in a really complicated ethical time. This confrontation with planned obsolescence provoked them to examine their most basic ethical concepts. There was an old school of engineers who believed that they should make a permanent, usable product that would never break. And there was a new school of engineers that were driven by the market who were clearly interested in making the most disposable product that they could. And this debate resolved itself by these new school of engineers taking over.
Planned obsolescence did not only affect engineers. The frustration of ordinary consumers is echoed in Arthur Miller's classic play, Death of a Salesman. Just like Willie Lomax, all consumers could do was complain powerlessly.
Once in my life, I'd like to own something outright before it's broken. I'm always in a race with the junkyard. Just finished paying for the car, and it's on its last legs. The refrigerator consumes belts like a crazy maniac. They time those things. They time them, so when you finally paid for them, they're used up.
Little did consumers know that on the other side of the Iron Curtain, in the countries of the Eastern Bloc, there was a whole economy without planned obsolescence. The communist economy was not ruled by the free market, but centrally planned by the state. It was inefficient and plagued by a chronic shortage of resources. In such a system, planned obsolescence did not make any sense. In former East Germany, the most efficient communist economy, official regulations stipulated that fridges and washing machines should work for 25 years.
Hier, dieser DDR-Kühlschrank, den habe ich 1985 gekauft. Der ist also mindestens 24 Jahre alt. Und die Glühbirne ist ebenso alt, habe ich noch nie ausgewechselt. Die ist also auch schon fast 25 Jahre alt.
In 1981, a lighting factory in East Berlin launched a long-life bulb. They took it to an international lighting fair, looking for buyers from the West.
Als die ostdeutschen Glühlampenhersteller 1981 diese Langlebensdauer-Glühlampen auf der Hannoveraner Messe präsentierten, meinten ihre Westkollegen, ihr wollt euch wohl alle arbeitslos machen. Woraufhin die NAVA-Leute, Ingenieure, antworteten, nein, im Gegenteil, indem wir Ressourcen schonen und den Wolfram nicht verpulvern, behalten wir gerade unsere Arbeitsplätze.
The Western buyers rejected the bulb. In 1989, the Berlin Wall came down. The factory was closed, and the East German long life bulb went out of production. Now, it can only be found in exhibitions and museums. After the fall of the Berlin Wall, consumerism is as rampant in the East as it is in the West. But there is one difference. In the age of the internet, consumers are ready to fight against planned obsolescence.
The first movie we made that really broke through was a movie about the iPod. And I was completely broke, and I had gotten this iPod, is like $500, $400. And about 8 months later, 12 months later maybe, the battery died in it. And I called Apple to ask them to replace the battery. And their policy at the time was to tell their customers to buy a new iPod.
Might as well go get a new one.
Apple doesn't offer?
No.
Apple doesn't offer a new battery for the iPod?
No.
It wasn't that the battery died that was annoying. Because in my Nokia cell phone, the battery dies, you buy a new battery. Even in my Apple laptop, when the battery would die, you replace the battery. But in the iPod, this expensive piece of hardware, when the battery died, you had to replace the entire unit. So it was my brother's idea to make a movie about just that. We went around with a stencil spray painting on every iPod advertisement we saw in town. iPod's unreplaceable battery lasts only 18 months. We put the video on our own little site, iPodsDirtySecret.com. In the first month, 6 weeks, it was at 5-6 million views. And the site went absolutely bananas.
A lawyer in San Francisco, Elizabeth Pritzker, heard about the video and together with her associates decided to sue Apple over the lifespan of the iPod battery. Half a century after the light bulb case, planned obsolescence was in court again.
When we brought this litigation, this was 2 years after the iPod was introduced, Apple had sold about 3 million iPods nationwide in the United States.
Many of the 3 million iPod owners were having battery problems and were willing to sue. One of them was Andrew Wesley.
We selected from amongst the consumers who had called us individuals who would serve as representatives in a class action. A class action is really a device that's fairly unique to the United States, where a small group of people stands in the shoes of a large group to bring one claim before a court.
My role in that case was as class representative on behalf of thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people. The case came to be known as Wesley versus Apple. When my friends and family learned that this was a major case, they thought I was, you know, becoming a radical. You know, here I am gonna sue. You know, I was the next Aaron Brockovich.
In December 2003, Elizabeth Pritzker filed the case at the San Mateo County Court, just a few blocks from the Apple headquarters.
We asked Apple for a number of technical documents regarding the battery life in the iPod, and we received a lot of technical data about the battery design, about the testing of the battery, and learned through that discovery that the type of the lithium battery that was contained within this iPod was designed by design to really only have a short period of life. I do think that Apple's development of the iPod was intended to be one of planned obsolescence.
After a tense few months, both parties hammered out a settlement. Apple set up a replacement service for the batteries and extended the warranty to 2 years. The claimants were offered compensation.
One thing that really bothers me personally is that Apple really promotes itself as a young, hip, forward-thinking company. And for a company like that not to have a good environmental policy that allows consumers to return products for proper recycling and disposal is really counterintuitive and counter to their message.
Planned obsolescence produces a constant stream of waste, which is shipped to third world countries, such as Ghana in Africa.
It's been between 8 and 9 years now when I noticed that loads and loads of containers were coming to this country with electronic waste. We're talking about end-of-life computers, end-of-life television sets, which nobody wants in the developed countries.
Shipping electronic waste to third world countries is forbidden by international law, but the merchants use a simple trick. They declare the waste as second-hand goods. More than 80% of the electronic waste that arrives in Ghana is totally beyond repair, and whole container loads are abandoned at dump sites all around the country.
We are at the dump site here in Agbogbloshie. In the past, we had this beautiful river called the Odor River, you know, that meandered its way through this area. It was teeming in the past. It had so much fish. So we actually attended a school not very far away from here. So we'd come play football and hang around the river. The fishermen would organize boat rides, I remember very well. But now it's all finished, it's all gone. And that makes me really, really sad. And it makes me angry.
These days, there are no school kids playing here after class. Instead, youngsters from poor families come here looking for scrap metal. They burn the plastic-covered cables from the discarded computers to salvage the metal inside. What is left is picked through by the younger children who are looking for any tiny pieces of metal which the older boys may have missed.
Behind the shipments have said that, well, we're trying to bridge the digital divide between Europe, America, and then the rest of Africa and Ghana, of course. But the reality is that these computers that are sent here simply do not work. There's no point in receiving electronic waste when you cannot deal with it, more so when you did not produce it and your country is being used as the world's trash bin.
The trash that for so long in the industrial age has been hidden from view is now coming into our lives and we can actually no longer easily avoid it. The waste economy is reaching its last legs because they don't physically have anywhere else to put the waste.
I think in the course of time, we've come to realize that the planet that we're living on cannot sustain that forever. There's a limit to natural resources and there's a limit to energy resources that we have.
Posterity will never forgive us. Posterity will suddenly find out about the throwaway attitudes, the throwaway lifestyles of people in the advanced countries.
People all over the world have started acting against planned obsolescence. Mike Anane is fighting against it from the receiving end. He has started by collecting information.
This is where I keep the e-waste that have asset tags or property tags. This says Amu Center Nordvestjylland. It's from Denmark. This is from Germany. sent here simply to be dumped. Westminster College. Apple should know better. It's a company that claims to be so green. There's a lot of Apple products that are being dumped here. I have a database that contain the asset tax, the contact addresses, telephone numbers of the companies that owned the electronic waste that have been dumped in Ghana.
Mike Anane plans to turn this information into evidence for a court case.
We need to take some action, some punitive measure. We need to sue people so they stop dumping e-waste in Ghana.
Marcos is on the internet again, looking for a way to extend the life of his printer. He has discovered a Russian website which offers a free software for printers with a counter chip. The programmer has even gone to the trouble of explaining his personal motivation.
This happens due to bad construction. This is their business model. Not a good one for user and environment. So I looked and found a way to make user-friendly software to allow active users resident input counter.
Marcos doesn't know what to expect, but downloads the software anyway. From a small village in France, John Thackera fights planned obsolescence by helping people share business and design ideas, ideas which come from all over the globe.
In all poorer countries, things are repaired automatically. The notion you throw a product away just because it breaks for some reason is completely unknowable and unthinkable, actually, to somebody in the South. In India, there's an actual word, jugaad, to describe this tradition of being able to fix things pretty much regardless of the complexity of it. We try to find people who are actively doing projects in the world rather than just talking about things or making abstract statements about how awful things are or what has to be changed.
One of these people is Warner Phillips, descendant of the dynasty of light bulb manufacturers.
I remember my grandfather taking me to one of the Phillips factories in Eindhoven to show me how light bulbs were mass manufactured in factories. This is very, very cool.
Nearly 100 years after the creation of the light bulb cartel, Warner Phillips follows family tradition with a different approach. He produces an LED bulb which lasts 25 years.
It's not like there's a green world and there is a business world. I think business and sustainability go hand in hand. It's actually the best basis to build a business on. And the only really real way to do that, I believe, is to factor in the true cost of the resources that have been used. But you also look at the energy consumption. You also look at the indirect energy consumption of transportation.
Si on faisait vraiment payer aux transporteurs le coût réel du transport, sans parler du fait que le pétrole est une ressource non renouvelable et pour lequel on n'a pas vraiment de substitut, je dirais que le prix du transport devrait être multiplié par 20 ou 30.
If you factor all of that in into every product that you manufacture, then there will be huge incentives for manufacturers and entrepreneurs all over the planet to make products that last forever.
Fighting against planned obsolescence can also be achieved by rethinking the engineering and production of consumer goods. A new concept called Cradle to Cradle claims that if factories worked like nature, planned obsolescence itself would become obsolete.
Wenn man über Umweltschutz redet, meint man bei uns immer sparen, verzichten, vermeiden, reduzieren, null Abfall, weniger schädlich. Wenn man sich die Natur aber im Frühling anschaut, ein Kirschbaum, kein Sparen, kein Verzichten, kein Vermeiden.
Nature produces abundantly, but fallen blossoms, dead leaves, and other discarded materials are not waste. They become nutrients for other organisms. A cycle.
Die Natur kennt keine Abfälle, sondern sie kennt nur Nährstoffe.
Braungart believes that industry can imitate this virtuous cycle of nature. He proved that this is possible when he redesigned the production process of a Swiss textile company.
Wenn man zum Beispiel so einen Stoff hat dazu, ein Sofa damit bezieht oder ein Stuhl, dann sind die Zuschnitte, was man abschneidet, so giftig, dass es als Sondermüll entsorgt werden muss.
Braungart found that hundreds of highly toxic dyes and chemicals were routinely used at the factory. For the production of the new fabrics, Braungart and his team reduced the list to 36 substances, all biodegradable.
Wir suchen jetzt alle Zutaten raus, dass man sie auch essen könnte. Das heißt, sie können kleinschneiden und in Müsli packen, wenn sie wollen. Wenn man eine Müllgesellschaft hat, ist jedes kurzlebige Produkt natürlich ein Müllproblem. Wenn es aber eine Gesellschaft ist, die Nährstoffe macht, ist jedes kurzlebige Produkt wieder eine Chance, etwas Neues zu machen.
For the more radical critics of planned obsolescence, reforming production is not enough. They want us to rethink our entire economic system and our values.
C'est une vraie révolution. C'est d'abord une révolution culturelle, parce que c'est un changement de paradigme, c'est un changement de mentalité.
This revolution is called degrowth. Serge Latouche travels from conference to conference explaining how to get out of the growth society altogether.
La décroissance, c'est un slogan provocateur qui a pour fonction de rompre avec le discours un peu euphorisant de la croissance possible, infinie, soutenable, et donc pour marquer la nécessité de changer de logique. L'essentiel du programme, en quelque sorte de la décroissance, tient en un mot, réduire. Réduire notre empreinte écologique, réduire nos gaspillages, notre surproduction, notre surconsommation. Réduisant la consommation, en réduisant la production, mais en libérant du temps libre, on peut développer d'autres formes de richesses qui ont l'avantage d'être, de ne pas s'épuiser quand on les consomme, comme l'amitié, le savoir.
We increasingly rely on objects to give us a sense of self-esteem and identity. It's partly the consequence of the breakdown of things that used to give us identity, like membership of a community or relationship to the land or all sorts of soft and social things which have been replaced by consumerism.
Si le bonheur dépendait du niveau de consommation, on devrait être dans la félicité absolue parce que nous consommons 26 fois plus que du temps de Marx. Mais toutes les enquêtes montrent que les gens ne sont pas 20 fois plus heureux parce que le bonheur est toujours quelque chose de subjectif, évidemment.
Critics of degrowth fear that it will destroy the modern economy and take us straight back to the Stone Age.
Revenir à une société soutenable, c'est-à-dire une société dont l'empreinte écologique ne dépasse pas une planète, eh bien, ça n'est pas revenir à l'âge de pierre, c'est revenir, toutes choses égales d'ailleurs, pour un pays comme la France, aux années 60. Ça n'est pas vraiment l'âge de pierre. On peut dire que la société de décroissance réalise la vision de Gandhi qui disait... Le monde est assez grand pour satisfaire les besoins de tous, mais il sera toujours trop petit pour satisfaire l'avidité de quelques-uns.
Marcos is installing the Russian freeware on his computer. The new software allows him to reset the counter chip inside his printer back to zero. The printer immediately unblocks.
dumpster fire to their victim, Larry.
A boy has been killed. The killer, Brandon, got the message that it's so threatening that Larry would want to be his Valentine that killing Larry seemed to be the right thing to do.
He was shot to death because of how he was.
He was so lovable. He was the nicest person.
He simply shouldn't have died.
Jewish, I think we can do it.
My truth is that I am a gay American.
Can we get a couple of still pictures now?
I never saw that.
This is what we were waiting for. This is it.
התעודה של HBO, כל שני ב-10, ב-YES דוקו HD וב-YES VOD.